The Jacksonville Jaguars select Mason Smith, defensive tackle, LSU.
When you look at him, Joel, and you're looking at trying to build out your defensive front, and you bring over Eric Armstead, who's huge. We know about Trayvon Walker and what a physical freak he was as the first overall pick. They've got some rare dudes now just in terms of the size, length, and athleticism up front.
Rolls away from pressure, in trouble. Just throws it up for grabs, and it is intercepted. Jarian Jones picked it off. Keelan Robinson on the return.
With the 114th pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Javon Foster, tackle, Missouri.
Duval!
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Dylan Denmark.
All right, Duval, indeed. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into Tuesday here on Jaguars Today, post-NFL draft. Wrapping up the month of April, Tony. It's like one-third of the way through the year. Mm-hmm. Had the Jags done anything good in the first 4 months of the year? I think they have.
I would agree.
They've had a few missteps along the way as well, but today's not about the missteps as much as we'll focus in on the positivity that they've done in the first 4 months of the year, are the things that you like that they've done. One of those things may be picking up the fifth-year options yesterday on Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, of course, coming in the same draft class. Kind of perfunctory. You kind of knew how that was. Hi, ladies. Everybody on YouTube, say hi to all the ladies. Just cutting right through the studio right there. And it's all good. We're fine. You know, we're just doing a radio show here. It's all good. I think for me, Tony, the fact that they waited until the 29th to do it, I wonder if they were hoping to get that deal done with Trevor Lawrence. You know what I mean? I don't expect they're going to do anything with Travis Etienne, and he's going to play this year and under the fifth-year option likely, and then, you know, good chance they let him walk after that due to the nature of the position. But I was wondering if they were just trying to get that thing done and have that one last big announcement and kind of tie up all the business of the offseason.
Maybe. The news on Miami picking up the fifth-year options on their two first-round picks broke 3 weeks ago, right? Like, everyone knew that's how that was going to end. They picked them up yesterday, right? Like, they may have been talking to those guys, either of them, about an extension throughout this entire process. I don't know.
You say Miami. You talking about?
Yeah. I'm talking about Jalen Waddle.
Oh, and they're two guys.
Yeah. Like, that announcement came weeks ago.
Sure.
That they were picking up the fifth-year option on him. There were a bunch of the fifth-year options that get picked up yesterday. I thought the timing of the Jaguars picking up was more deadlines are the things that make these things happen. Right? Like, I'm not saying that they haven't been working on the extension with Trevor Lawrence and they wouldn't have been happy to get it done 2 weeks ago if that happened to be the timing of it. I don't disagree that they've been working on getting that kind of thing done, but I don't think the delay in picking up the fifth-year option was because they thought the deal was imminent. I think it's more, all right, we got to get the fifth-year option picked up by this day. This is the day we got to do it. This is the day we announce it, even if the whole process, it's been, yeah, we're picking up the fifth-year option on both those guys. Duh.
I think, though, there was a little bit of buzz from some people that thought they could actually get it done before the NFL draft.
Certainly was.
You know, so I from my standpoint, I think they're feeling like, well, why not just wait and see how this plays out? There's no rush, and
that's
then if we get it done, we'll announce the extension. Either way, Trevor Lawrence was always going to be here for a long, long time.
No doubt.
As we headed into this offseason. And this is just, you know, a placekeeping move for him. And they'll continue to work on it. And they can – look, here's the thing. He can play this year, and he can play on the fifth-year option. And any contract extension he signs can be tacked onto the end of that. That's one way of doing it. Mm-hmm. They can rip everything up and start it right now if they want to. It's really – we have no idea what their approach is going to be and what the discussions have been on that front with Trevor Lawrence.
No, and, you know, we talked about yesterday the money that they have.
Apparently, right? You're right, the third most cap space in the league at the moment.
Right, and I've been willing to be pretty vocal on the Cam Robinson thing throughout this process. I would have been willing to walk away. Now, the reasons I would have been willing to walk away from the Cam Robinson thing is the money, right? To pay him that much money to be the left tackle, it's like, well, you got cheaper options to do that this year. Well, with the cap space they have, enough of that noise.
Right. There aren't that many players that you want to go out there and try to sign in the third wave of free agency, but you could still take a huge first-year cap hit on any deal or new money cap hit.
Yeah.
And that would be preferable if you've got that space sitting there this year.
But it's the cap space that they've created for themselves make the – they need to move on from Cam Robinson. It's moved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, in my mind. Like, that was the whole idea behind it to me was, well, they could save a little bit of money by moving on from Cam Robinson. They don't need to save money right now moving on from Cam Robinson. If they happen to get two massive deals done with people – and they needed to create some space. Okay, maybe it comes back into your thinking a little bit at that point in time. But until that happens, not even a thought in my mind that Cam Robinson isn't going to be the opening day left tackle.
By the way, overthecap.com has him a little over $30 million at third in the league.
Uh-huh.
SpotTrack has him over $30 million at fifth in the league. So either way, they've got a lot of cap space. They've got money to maneuver and do anything they want to as far as, you know, give extensions. Do whatever, you know, lower numbers, raise numbers up, take more of a hit now, you know?
Absolutely.
Turn signing bonus into roster bonus, and instead of spreading, you know, out payments over years or cap hits over the years, take it all in one. That's certainly possible when you're maneuvering with the cap. But that's one of the things that Jags have done this offseason. I mean, that again, that's kind of bookkeeping, right? It's like we know that's going to happen. It is, I guess – I say we know that's going to happen. Not every team picks up the fifth-year option on their rookies. We knew it was going to happen, certainly with Trevor and Travis Etienne. There's no that's almost the preferable way. If you're going to draft the first-round running back, get him on that rookie deal, get the full 5 years out of him, and then see where you stand without committing the big money to a position that you can often hit in the draft, you know, with the mid-rounds and be just as effective. So we'll see. You know, Travis Etienne's career ultimately plays out longer than the next couple of years here in Jacksonville. What's going on now?
News coming out from Jaguars PR. They announced 13 undrafted free agents that they have signed.
Okay.
They have released kicker Joey Sly and Zay Jones.
Wow.
Yeah.
Zay, we hardly knew you.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if Zay requested his release. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. With his place in the pecking order, it seems a little odd to me, Tone, but, you know, we talked yesterday about Parker Washington, will he make this team or not? Well, every receiver just became more likely to make this team other than the big three of Kirk,
sure,
Davis, and Brian Thomas in whatever order you want to list them. They're your definite big three now. I mean, there was the great likelihood that Zay Jones was going to be your number four receiver this year.
Absolutely.
And then you get into, well, Duvernay's active on game day. If Zay doesn't have a special teams role, I guess, is he active on game day? But he's a vet. You know, that I feel like Trevor Lawrence can rely on. If you get an injury to one of those outside guys at this position, you better be ready for somebody to step into that role, whether maybe it's Elijah Cooks or Seth Williams with another year of development. You know, Parker Washington's a different guy. He's more of a direct replacement or backup for Christian Kirk, I would look at it here, but it certainly makes him more likely. Well, you know, look, people looked at Zay's contract when he came in and thought, it was a big overpay. It wasn't. You know, when he was healthy, he was worth the money that they gave Zay Jones.
Yeah.
And that's interesting that, you know, it happened at this point. Like, it was always a possibility. We knew if they traded for one of those big-time receivers,
yeah,
he may be included in the deal, or maybe you let him go for cap purposes. But they've got the cap space, right?
Yeah.
And I do wonder if Zay just looked at the landscape and said, how many balls coming my way? Right, with Kirk, Davis, and Thomas. They're clearly the top three. And I wonder, you know, if we'll find out. We'll talk with Mike DiRocco coming up a little bit later on this hour. He was scheduled to join us anyway in about 30 minutes from now. So we'll get the latest from D-Rock.
Like, that one coming across Twitter is where I saw it first, right? And I saw Demetrius tweeted something about it. And it caught me so off guard that I was clicking. I was like, is this really Demetrius? Like, it was one of those.
Right.
Like, it was Zay Jones? Like, it surprised me to that level. And then, you know, I went and looked at the email, and sure enough, there it is. They're releasing him.
Well, you wonder, again, did he request it? And even if he did, is this a signal maybe they feel better about one of these other young guys making the team? Or do they just look at the numbers game and say, well, we replaced Ridley and Zay with Davis and Thomas. It's really, in terms of the depth chart, it's really no different.
Yeah, I think his cap hit this year was a little, or his base this year, whatever it was like $10.5 million. I think I hadn't looked at the numbers in a while, but I think they could save three and a half if they moved on.
Well, I got Zay Jones still listed on the Jags here for the next few seconds, so let me look and see what the SpotTrack said the situation was here. Let's see.
But it does feel like a situation where Zay's side of it had to say, you know what, maybe it's time to move on from this kind of thing, because I do think there was still. There's no reason to move on from Zay Jones.
Tell me, can this be right?
Huh.
His cap hit was going to be $4.33 million, right? Mm. His dead cap number is 14.5.
Whoa.
So they just took a $10 million cap. Now, they had the cap space to do it, but you're taking a $10 million cap hit for and cutting into your depth?
Okay.
Seems a little odd, right?
Does,
I mean, if he's here next year, it would have been a similar thing. His cap hit next year would only have been $5.6 million, and the dead cap money would have been about double that. And you really didn't get into where things evened out until, you know what, though? As I'm looking at it, Tone, I think I'm looking at, I'm sorry, I'm looking at 2022. They had it listed a little bit odd on here, okay? They actually save about $4.2 million. Okay, that makes a lot more sense, right? That made no sense to me. Why would they take a cap hit to get rid of a guy who provides at least veteran depth for your team? But Zay Jones' cap number was going to be 10.75 this year. Now it's going to be dead cap money of about 6.5. So, you know, you save over $4.2 million. Got a lot of cap space here we're generating here. Are we going to get, you know, a Trevor Lawrence deal where, you know, a cap hit comes in 2024? Because you can have an extension where none of it hits the cap, really, this year at all. So we'll see how that all plays out. Very interesting. We'll talk again with Mike DiRocco. If you've got thoughts on that, we welcome them. We'll welcome in Dylan Denmark right now to the program. Pockets, why don't you give the heads up? You're like the Zay Jones tracker around here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. Are you ready for a top five today, Dylan?
Let me see. Wait.
Number five.
Yeah, he's ready to go. We might as well jump right in then. We've got our top five, Tuesday top five today. Just asking you, what are your five favorite moves the Jags have made this offseason, right? They can be anything. Just by they cut Zay Jones. Get that dead weight out of here. Now, Zay, we're not saying that, but somebody might. I don't know, man. I can't tell you what they're going to say. So, number five, Tony, what's your fifth favorite Jaguar move of the offseason?
Third-round pick Jarian Jones, cornerback out of FSU. Zero touchdowns allowed on 458 coverage snaps in 2022. Hasn't allowed a touchdown in the last 2 years. Looks like the long-term answer at slot corner, which in today's NFL is a starter for an NFL defense. And look, I love the emotion just watching him getting drafted. That was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the MJD stuff is just icing on the cake to me. Like, the player I was excited about, all of it I was excited about when I was looking into it a little bit. And then the MJD, you know, when you get him in the A gap, someone's going to pay the price, right, for MJD hitting the hole, that kind of thing. That's all just icing on the cake. But number five for me, Jarian Jones.
All right. What about you, Pockets?
I'm going to go Mitch Moore, signing the center from Buffalo. He is going to be a lot better than what we had last year, and hopefully he can add something that we didn't have last year and be more physical and having a consistent run game coming next season for Jacksonville.
All right, Mitch Morse being signed as the center for the Jags. That's been a popular one from the people who have submitted their selections today. I'm going to say the hiring of Ryan Nielsen at number five for me. Not so much the firing of Mike Caldwell, okay, because I don't know if the defense was more culpable than the offense last year. You know, I think they both deserve plenty of blame. But I think once they made that decision, Ryan Nielsen, in every corner of the NFL, anybody who's worked with this guy lauds the heck out of him, right? He's universally praised as a guy who gets a lot out of the raw material he has to work with. I think the Jags are giving him better raw material than he had to work with, and I can't wait to see him get his hands on a guy like Mason Smith and some of this other young talent on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, we can question whether Mike Caldwell and the defensive staff was somewhat of the fall guy, that Press Taylor could have been right there on the chopping block with him. But once the decision was made, I think it was a quick resolution to target Ryan Nielsen, and they were able to go in there, swoop in once they got permission to speak to him and get him to agree to a contract rather rapidly. And the Jags have added some nice pieces, and I certainly don't think Nielsen has been a detriment to them doing that on the defensive side of the ball. So he's number five for me, the hiring of Ryan Nielsen as the Jags defensive coordinator. You can play along today and hit us up with your top five you like in any fashion at 641-1010 on the All-Pro Roofing phone lines or on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. You can also hit us up in the YouTube chat or on social media at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Denmark.
Go Tigers.
I thought so. All right. I think we're going to be stuck on that one for a little while, and that's quite fine with all of us here. Coach O, you know, expressing his love for the Bayou Bengal crew coming in. That's right, Coach. So send us your top five list if you'd like. We can talk Zay Jones being released by the Jacksonville Jaguars, a move that, look, I'm not that upset about it. No. I'm just – it's curious as to their thought of – why now? Is this a favor to Zay? You know what I mean? Like as teams right now, if you are Zay Jones, you want to be released yesterday, right? I mean, because teams are still settling in. The Raiders, for instance, signing Michael Gallup, Tony, right? That could have been Zay Jones, maybe, right? Like people are who missed out on their guys in the draft or on that position are going to reconfigure and go looking to see what's remaining out there. He's going to be one of the best pass catchers probably available, is my guess, in free agency. So, again, Mike DiRocco will talk about that with us coming up in about 25 minutes. You're listening to Jaguars Today, your Tuesday top five, your top five favorite moves the Jags have made this offseason. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yeah. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
You know, Tom, once you mentioned Zay Jones' name, kind of wiped out all thoughts of the other things you mentioned, including the release of Joey Sly, which, like, Joey Sly never played a snap for the Jaguars. But he did sign. And when you sign a kicker, a veteran kicker, in the offseason like that, especially that early, you kind of think he's going to be at least the incumbent, the lead guy heading into training camp to battle it out. They spent a draft pick on Cam Little, and apparently they're not going to have much of a competition. I know Riley Patterson's still here, but I find it hard to believe that a guy that you didn't bring back because he didn't have the leg strength that you were looking for went to Detroit. I don't think his leg got all demonstrably stronger, but we'll see. I guess they'll, you know, have that in. You need an extra leg for, you know, camp anyway to take a little pressure off the guy if you're doing a lot of kicking in any given day. But
sure,
Cam Little, super accurate guy. We've seen, remember the days of Roberto Aguayo, Tony? He couldn't miss in college. And then the Bucs took him, in the second round? Terrence wanted him in the top 10 for the Jags. Love you, Terrence. Damn, that was dumb. Anyway, and then he was out of the league in like no time. So got to be a little bit careful about expecting the kicker to make the transition that perfectly.
Look, they obviously made it a priority this offseason. They thought they had Will Lutz for a day and a half, right? And then he decided to go back to Denver, and so that's when they pivoted off of that and went and signed Joey Sly. When everything was said and done, I do think, you know, the Aguayo thing is you spend that kind of draft capital on a guy as opposed to sixth round in a bad draft. You know, it's okay. You know, if it doesn't work with him, but it's pretty clear that they've decided this is the direction they're going to go, right, with the kicker position. Cam Little's going to be the opening starter for the Jaguars at kicker.
That's, certainly looks that way.
You know, like I would be
– unless he's horrible all season.
Right. I would be really surprised if that's not the way this whole thing plays out.
But kickers get drafted sometimes and get cut too.
They
you know
do.
What I mean? Like I would expect him to be the guy. He was very, very accurate, and I think that's what they're putting the priority on. You know, as opposed to the occasional 57-yard field goal that you can kick. And plus, again, with the kickoff being different than it was, you want to land it between the 20 and the goal line.
Yeah.
You don't want to put it into the end zone.
Yeah, strong leg now is only applicable to field goals.
Yeah, well, the long field goals,
yeah,
right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So, you know, you almost wonder how much accuracy is going to come in on the kickoff as well. It's not just depth of the kickoff, but am I kicking it, you know, like how specific are some of these special teams plays going to get in terms of the returns? Are we going to see the two guys out there? The Jags draft Keelan Robinson for that exact reason this weekend. Time will tell. But the news of the morning, a couple of things. Of course, we had the fifth-year options picked up for both Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. But as we saw that coming a mile away, it almost seems like old news now as that happened yesterday. But Zay Jones getting released by the Jags. And look, if you are the fourth receiver on a team, you have a $10 million cap hit, it's still significant, right? But, okay, you're still taking a $6.5 million cap hit. So if you needed another receiver, if you had an injury, can you find a guy as good as Zay Jones for $4.2 million?
Right.
That's what it comes down to, right? Yeah. Other than the cash that you're saving, which, quite frankly, I don't care if they save cash. You know, I care. Sean Conn's got plenty of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too worried if he spent a little extra on Zay Jones just to have an insurance policy. So we'll see if it comes back to haunt them. Or maybe, just maybe, a guy like Elijah Cooks or Seth Williams does have a path now to – actually making this team, and even if it's not a clear path to being active on game day, has a realistic chance to develop on the main NFL roster instead of, you know, Elijah Cooks flashed all offseason, and then he got three catches, I think, by the end of the year. You know what I mean? So maybe he'll get more of an opportunity here, or maybe it'll be more for Devin Duvernay or Parker Washington or even Tim Jones, who they like Tim Jones, I know, but I don't know. I just never seen any special receiving traits. I know he's fast, but a lot of guys are fast. You know, we'll see.
Yeah. Plus, if they get any kind of spark from any of those undrafted guys, right, that come in, which would be more in line with the Elijah Cooks, Tim Jones, you know,
right,
kind of thing.
I would think more like a guy who's been here on that path. Those guys, I think, would be doing well to make the practice squad.
Yeah. I mean, the guys that have been here for a little while certainly have a step up on any of the guys that are coming in as undrafted free agents. But it's not unheard of, you know, that one of those guys just impresses going through the process and you're having to impress more than Tim Jones or Elijah Cooks, right? It's the bar isn't so high that you can't reach it necessarily as an undrafted player, but Tim Jones does give them some juice as a special teams guy too. So
you could also have you could have a situation where Tim Jones is on the roster, Duvernay's taking Agnew's spot, and it's basically like it was last year, and you swapped out Ridley and Zay for Davis and Thomas, or Thomas and Davis, however you want to list them. Yeah. All right, let's get back to the countdown today. We're doing our Tuesday top five of our five favorite moves the Jags have made this offseason. Tony liked the selection of Jarian Jones at number five. Pockets like the signing of Mitch Morse. I went with the hiring of Ryan Nielsen. Why don't we continue?
Number four.
All right, Dylan, what do you got at four?
I like the Ryan Nielsen hire at number four for me. From everything, like I was just reading an article from John Osher on Jaguars.com. He coached Calais Campbell last year in Atlanta, and Calais Campbell was going into year 16, and he said, you don't see many guys that are going to year 16 that have all the knowledge that Calais Campbell has and still change their game and see them view the way they play differently. And I feel like now that we have Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker, and then you add Eric Armstead and you add a couple other pieces, Mason Smith, for you to be, you know, nasty and aggressive and you want to attack like Ryan Nielsen has and wants to do with his defense, I feel like he's the guy that can get the most out of this defensive line. And every good defense has a good defensive line, regardless of where it is in the NFL. And if you go back to the defensive hiring, he's probably the best guy that was available that could have gotten this job. He was getting offers from the Chargers and I think the Eagles to be a head coach job. Ryan Nielsen, number four for me.
All right, there you go. Ryan Nielsen, Pockets giving a even better better breakdown than I did, Pockets. That's why I only had him at five, though. For me, I'm going to go with Eric Armstead, who will help that defensive line. I think he changes things in a lot of ways here, Tone. I mean, he automatically became the best defensive tackle on this team. He may be the best run stuffer, but he's definitely going to be the best penetrator from the inside. At least that's what he profiles to. And he is, now that we've seen the selection of Mason Smith, I think the perfect guy for Mason Smith to kind of mold and model his game on. He's a vet. He showed us, not that this is the most important thing, that he even said he came here in part because of Trent Baalke being here and his relationship with Trent Baalke, which I think opened up some eyes. But it was a move that was unexpected, and on top of that, it was a move that prevented a division rival from getting him because Houston wanted to get him via trade, mm-hmm. and they couldn't create the cap space in the right amount of time. So when free agency officially opened up, the Jags were able to pounce and jump in there, kind of similarly in some ways to what Tennessee did when they were sitting back, the Jags probably thinking Calvin Ridley was going to sign on the dotted line with them, and they lost him at the last minute. So I've got Arik Armstead, who I think is going to be a really good player for this team for the next few years, at number four.
So do I. Arik Armstead, number four for me, three-year, $43 million deal here in Jacksonville. The Jags needed some juice. And among those interior defensive linemen, they certainly tried to address that in a couple different ways during the NFL draft, but Armstead is my favorite of all those acquisitions by a pretty sizable margin, even with Mason there in the second round, who I'm hopeful about, but he makes me nervous. As I talked about yesterday on the show, Arik doesn't make me nervous, right? I think they just got a guy who's got borderline Pro Bowl player potential to him. I think he can give you that kind of production from that interior spot on the defensive line and gets to number four on my list for me.
All right, there you go. Continuing the countdown, you can send us your top five list, your top five favorite Jaguars moves of the offseason. By the way, among the 13 undrafted free agents they signed, let's see, we got 1, 2, 5 receivers, a tight end, a defense. Wow, Andre Carter slid all the way through the draft. Mm-hmm. Right? Wasn't he talked about like as a mid-rounder at some point out of Indiana, defensive end? I could have sworn he was. So they picked him up. They signed a running back out of Villanova, Jalen Jackson, running back out of Akron, Lorenzo Lingard, a couple of linebackers, a safety, a guard. So not much on the offensive line, but it's interesting. We'll get into it with D-Rock to see if any of the names jump out to him. The Zay Jones release, the fifth-year options picked up. The NFL draft recently concluded. We got a lot to talk about with ESPN's Mike DiRocco. He will join us next here on Jaguars Today. Keep it on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
D-Rock in the house. Mike DiRocco of ESPN fame has been busy with draft coverage of your Jacksonville Jaguars, as we all have. D-Rock, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys today?
We're okay. We figured we'd talk about like 50-year options in addition to the draft and things like that today. But we see this morning Zay Jones has been released by the team. And I understand, 10.7 is a big cap hit for your fourth receiver, D-Rock, but they're still taking a over a $6.5 million dead cap hit. What do you make of the move?
Well, you're paying your fourth receiver $7 million a year. That was his base salary. And, it's a bigger cap hit than what you want to have for your fourth receiver. So, it sounds like, the Jarvis Landry tryout for the rookie tryout is this leads me to believe that, as long as he looks okay, that they're probably going to sign him for a much more reasonable deal and, bring that veteran guy back. And, they're moving on from Zay. So it makes a little bit of sense when you look at it that way. And really, where was he going to play? How much he was going to rotate with Gabe Davis and with Brian Thomas Jr. So they just figured that was too much money to spend on a guy who might not be on the field very much.
Have you heard anything about from Zay's side? Does Zay requesting to, move on from Jacksonville, does that have any part in making the timing of the decision as they made it?
I have not heard anything from his camp yet. I mean, I've got some calls out and such, but I have not heard anything as to whether that was indeed the case. But the moment they took Brian Thomas, we kind of speculated that this might be getting ready to happen, and I expected it, if it was going to happen, to be honest with you, to happen on Monday. But I guess, I was a day early.
Yeah, I guess. The Landry thing would surprise me. Like, I get it. Calvin Ridley had been out of the league for a while, but Calvin Ridley, the last time we saw him as a full-time player in the league, was explosive. Jarvis Landry was never that. He was a guy who could get open. He was had very good short area quickness. He was a really low yards per catch guy. He is not at all the same kind of player that Zay Jones is. I'm not saying better or worse. I'm saying completely different kind of receiver, D-Rock. If that's what they're thinking, I would rather it be that they think Elijah Cooks or Seth Williams can advance and take that roster spot for cheap this year than go down the Jarvis Landry road. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that may be a possibility, but I don't think the Jaguars are expecting very much out of Elijah Cooks at all, nor Parker Washington. And let's be honest, they hope never to see either one of them on the field, because if they see one or two of those guys on the field, it means they've had injuries at the position again. And, you know, Zay kind of does what Gabe Davis kind of does. Now, Zay is faster than Gabe Davis for sure, but you know, he was supposed to be the guy that helped them stretch the field. And now you've added Brian Thomas Jr. for significantly less money. So they've had, what, three of the same guy, kind essentially.
Yeah, I hear you.
And one's got to go.
Yeah, the Jarvis Landry thing, he does the same thing Christian Kirk does, just not as good, right? Like, at this point in their career, I get it, though. The money has got to be the explanation for why they're making this decision when they made it, D-Rock, when everything is said and done. And it creates even more cap space, and we've been trying to fiddle around in our own heads for the last couple of days. What are they or can they do with the cap space that they have right now? What would you expect them to do over the course of maybe it's the next few weeks, months, whatever? Is there something else in store for this team over the course of this period of time with all the cap space that they've created now?
The Trevor extension?
No. Well, it could be that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's really kind of if they're going to sign anybody, I don't expect it to be, maybe a cornerback that's out there.
Xavier Howard's out there, D-Rock.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of money. They didn't address it in the draft, in terms of finding a guy that they, with one of the, I shouldn't say that they didn't address it because they did, but they didn't go after one of the best corners in the draft and decided instead the wide receiver was more important in the first round. They did obviously draft Jarian Jones from Florida State, and, he's going to compete at the nickel spot there. But, Mike and I talked yesterday on the phone briefly, and I'm of the ilk that, they didn't do anything to address edge rusher. And maybe this is one of the moves that they could do to clear some money for, finding an edge rusher that would help them. But again, all indications that I have in talking from people there is they feel that they're pretty good in terms of defensive guys at this point. They feel like they're okay. I don't agree with it, but there's still guys out there that are available, Yannick Ngakoue, obviously we brought that up, and Calais Campbell's out there still, mm-hmm. One of those guys that are available. I don't see them making a big move for one of those guys, though. I think they're going to stand pat with what they have. They feel like Gibson is going to give them a decent amount of reps and time on the field as the number three. And plus, we really still don't know what they're going to do on third down. What's their third down package going to look like? Is Treylon Walker going inside? Is he going to be inside with Eric Armstead? I mean, what are they going to do? We really don't have a good feel for that yet, and probably won't until we start to see what they do in OTAs. But it's always good to have some extra salary cap space, and I know they want to try and get that Trevor extension done, and maybe if you can get a little, you have some extra space, you can structure the deal so normally you would make this a very minimal cap hit year, but you could structure it to where maybe you take a little bit more of the cap on this year, and then you go ahead and you can spread some more stuff out, and you don't have to take as massive a jump in 2025 or 2026. We'll see how it goes, but I just expected the Zay Jones move at some point. So we'll have to see what they do receiver wise, whether that is with Jarvis Landry, or whether they're just going to sit pat with the guys that they got.
Yeah, people were asking, do you think they'll trade Zay Jones? I mean, what are you going to get for Zay Jones when you have to pay him nearly $11 million, right? I mean, there's cheaper labor out there, I think, for sure, if you're going that route. And D-Rock, in terms of the pass rush, you know, like you and I disagree a little bit on where defensive end falls in the pecking order, but I think it could be, I think we will see Trayvon inside sometimes on third down, but I think it's going to be at times what Josh Allen laid out. Imagine he and Walker on the edges and Armstead in the middle there with Mason Smith, who I can absolutely see that be a look that they give you with four down linemen this year.
Yeah. Again, I don't know what they're going to do. That's the interesting thing. The thing about pass rusher, you can never have enough. You can never have enough. I mean, the two Super Bowls the Giants won was because they had multiple pass rushers and rolled guys in and out on the edge, on the interior. You know, the thing you just wonder with the Jags is Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen have been remarkably healthy. And Josh Allen has played through injuries pretty much the last 2 years. And last year he was dealing with a shoulder injury, you know, that pretty much lingered throughout the year. At some point, is that luck going to run out? And then if you're not able to have one of those two guys out there, or God forbid if you're the Jags, that both of those guys got to miss a game or two, you know, you can't think like that, but that is a real possibility in this game. So I just thought it should have been a position that they would have addressed maybe in the third or fourth round. And again, all indications were that this draft was not a great draft for pass rushers, so maybe they decided to punt on that.
Well, let me ask you, D-Rock, the Giants example, I think, is the exception of the rule. Mm-hmm. I think most teams win the Super Bowl because they have a great quarterback and a great passing game now. And, I mean, George Karlaftis is a nice defensive end, but, you know, that's not the focal point of the Kansas City Chiefs team for sure. I mean, I don't know. Name the best third pass rusher on any team in the NFL. I'm going to have a hard time doing it.
And, you know it gets long. Eli was great in both those runs. It was the two playoff runs he made, and he was fantastic
along
with that.
He got hot, right. He got hot in the postseason, and they did have a great pass rush. But I think that's the harder way to build the team. And you know, like, Dorrance Armstrong might have been that guy last year in Dallas, right? They had Micah Parsons, and they had DeMarcus Lawrence and Armstrong. But there aren't many teams I can name the third pass rusher on, because usually that guy doesn't do much. And I think most teams don't have a top two that combined for 27 plus last year. So anyway, I mean, yes, an injury could hurt them, but I think that would happen to any team. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'll say this. We don't know. And to this point, Trevor Lawrence has not proven to be the guy yet in terms of being that elite quarterback. He's shown flashes of it, but he hasn't been consistent. And if you're going to win in the AFC, you have got to get past Mahomes and Josh Allen and Burrow, and now maybe C.J. Stroud, and maybe in a year or so, again, Justin Herbert. I mean, it's not easy to get through the AFC. And the one thing that you could do defensively if you're the Jags is bolster that pass rush and maybe help you out. Because I think we all agree there's still major questions about the secondary, right? So that pass rush helps your secondary. Obviously, we all know that. So that's why I thought that maybe should have been a higher priority than clearly they saw it as. Or they just didn't want to take a chance on some of those guys. You know, Miles Coles is definitely
a
project guy. We won't see him on the field at all this year. But, you know, either way, look, they feel like they're ready to go. This is a team they've got defensively. They're going to go with Ronald Darby at corner, and see if they can mix in Jones as a nickel and Darnell Savage in there as well, and Antonio Johnson. So it's young and not a group that we've seen a lot from, so we'll just have to see how it goes.
A lot of draft grades coming out for the last couple of days. I want to ask you that, but instead I'll ask you to give Trent Baalke a grade for what the Jags have done over the course of this whole offseason.
Careful.
I like what they've done. I mean, to me, what do they need to do? They needed to get better on the offensive and defensive lines, and I think they've done that. The Armstead signing, the Mason Smith, Jefferson, I mean, I think those guys will help. On the offensive line, I think they probably could have done more, but Foster's a swing tackle right now that's probably going to end up being your starter at one of the spots next year if they don't bring Walker Little back. I'm not expecting them to bring Cam Robinson back. And to me, you know, we talk about Gabe Davis and we talk about Darnell Savage and Ronald Darby, but to me, the best signing of the entire offseason was Mitch Morse at center, because that was a massive weak spot. So I'll give Trent Baalke credit for getting, for addressing or trying to address, for the most part. I think they should have done a little bit more on the offensive line. The biggest weaknesses on this team, you know, obviously not an edge rusher, but certainly they got pushed around on both sides of the line of scrimmage last year, and they addressed that. And then in the draft, I like the Brian Thomas thing. I would have gone corner, but I understand what they did. And he was able to trade back six spots and still get the guy they wanted, pick up some extra capital for next year. So I thought he had a solid, solid offseason. I'd give him a B.
Yeah, that's about what I give him too, right? Not everything's perfect. I think the big thing prior to the draft was, you know, not being able to retain Calvin Ridley. And clearly he wanted to, but I thought he did pretty much everything else. And people will talk about, did he, like you said, did he do enough on the line? Well, time will tell. But they did have a plan, and they do feel like Cam Robinson missed eight games last year. They feel if he's healthy this season, they're going to be better at that position. They think Ezra Cleveland would be better because he'll be healthy. They got the new center. I think they're hoping that Brandon Scherff has one more good year left in him, and he may give way to Cooper Hodges eventually. And, you know, we'll see. That could be a guy that they didn't have before. And, you know, they do. I think they got a better, you know, offensive tackle situation with the swing tackle depth, D-Rock, than probably a lot of teams in the NFL as well. They're not elite, but they're guys that at least you can go to play with on Sunday afternoon. So,
yeah, you totally feel confident and comfortable if you're the Jags, if Walker Little has to start at either spot. There's no, oh no, how's it going to go? Because you've seen him perform pretty well at both spots. So that's a luxury that a lot of teams don't have.
No doubt. All right. So D-Rock, if you could add a veteran, right? This is the third wave of free agency. We're not talking about a game changer necessarily, but would it be an edge player? Like where would you hope, if they're going to kick the tires on somebody who's been around, had some success, what position or positions are you focusing on?
Yeah, you know, the Xavien Howard signing would be interesting to me.
Wouldn't it though?
They
got all the space they need to do it too. I don't know what he would command.
I think they're at 31.5 according to our system right now. And that doesn't include the Zay Jones.
Correct.
Move,
right.
Which would get them at like, what, about 39, give or take 39.
They only picked up, they picked up about four on Zay.
Four. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
so 35, call it.
But, there we go. So there you're in great shape there. And then, you know, I would take a look at edge rusher, and it's not a great list of guys that are available without question. You know, but I'm so still intrigued by Yannick Ngakoue, and I know he does only one thing, but he's done it pretty darn well throughout the course of his career. You know, That's the two spots that I would look at. And,
zero issue, by the way. Go ahead. If Jan wants to get on board with where the train's headed, let's go, right? I mean, I don't care.
Is he willing to accept the role?
Accept the role and humble himself a little bit, right? You know, just do whatever he needs to do to make sure everything's copacetic, and let's put it behind. Nobody cares. We just want to win games, man, you know? And I know you're advocating for adding talent here. So.
Just to throw this in here, Yannick Ngakoue has started every game he's played the last 3 years. Even going from team to team to team, I don't know how he's going to handle a team like Jacksonville talking to him. I'm not saying that there aren't a whole lot of teams that are going to be in the same kind of position as Jacksonville looking at Yannick Ngakoue, but I think the question of how willing is he to accept that kind of role is very much an open question.
And on top of that, accept that, kind of eating some humble pie coming back here. So I don't anticipate it happening. I'm just saying, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's add some more talent, man. Let's not sit on this pile of cap space, D-Rock. Let's put it to good use. And by the way, a final thought here. If they do get the deal done with Trevor Lawrence, or when they get the deal done with Trevor Lawrence, is it truly an extension? Like, will he be playing under his rookie deal this year and under the fifth-year option next year, and then the new extension kicks in after that? Or have you gotten any intel on what they're thinking in that regard?
I have not.
Okay.
Generally, it would probably take, as a general rule, I believe, the way most teams would probably structure it is he would still play under this, you know, the cap number and what he received this year would still be relatively on the lower end.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a little bit more than what he's got now, but then generally you go a little further out and that's when the big numbers kick in. So I would expect, you know, he gets the signing bonus this year. His salary stays pretty stable for this season, which I think is a little over 10. I'd have to go back and look at that. And then it would kick in after 2024.
All right. D-Rock, you're a national treasure. I hope Jaguar fans appreciate you and the depth of your knowledge and influence in this Northeast Florida area, sir. Anyway, good to catch up with you. Hope you enjoyed the draft. What is it like for you now? Does it slow down a little bit, or is it waiting on rookie minicamp, or what? What's the story?
Yeah, waiting on rookie minicamp, working on some stories, obviously, that are going to run in the summer at this point. And then we've got OTAs. One a week is open, so I'll be over there once a week. And then we've got the mandatory minicamp, which is in, mid-June, and then it's vacation until we get back here for training camp at the end of July. So this is sort of the lighter time of year, which is always welcome after going through the season and then free agency and then the draft. So I know everybody is excited and wanting the season to get here, but I'm okay if it takes a little longer.
Amen to that, brother. It's a good time of year. All right, D-Rock, we appreciate you as always and encourage folks to give you a follow at ESPN DeRocco out there on social media. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you.
All right, thank you. Mike DeRocco of ESPN on the Jaguars beat. Some good stuff there. Do you agree with D-Rock on what he had to say? Do you disagree with D-Rock on what he had to say? I mean, I get it's a lot of money, Tony, to spend on your receiver, but it's not a ton more cap space. You know, the $4 million in cap space, I hope they have a plan to use it. Mm-hmm. You know, I get it. It is a lot to be paying your fourth receiver, but if you've got, like, I want this team, If they lose one of their now, let's call them the big three wide receivers, what's their next best option right now? And especially if it's an outside guy, is it going to have to be one of these young guys? Or maybe they end up playing more two tight end formations and things like that, and we see more Brenton Strange. Remember, he's on the team.
Tony. He is.
Spent a second-round pick on that guy last year. By the way, I think DeAndre Carter, DeAndre Carter Jr. went to Army. Remember Andre Carter went to Cal, I think, and played in the league for a number of years. Good pass rusher, mm-hmm. right? I think his son went to Army, if I'm not mistaken, and came out recently. This DeAndre Carter, the Jag sign, I was looking on Dane Brugler's draft guide. And again, draft guides are what they are. I think Brugler does a nice job, but it's not gospel. He had him ranked among the edge rushers 41st in the country. But he's good size, like prototypical kind of 4'3". Guy, he's 6'3 and a half, about, depending on where you see him listed, 270 to 285, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. So big boy, you know, like the mold of a traditional 4'3 end among the undrafted free agents that the Jags picked up this morning. And the big news of the day, Zay Jones, we hardly knew you. Joey Sly, we knew you even less, right? Joey, good luck, I guess. One of the great Jaguars. Anybody have a Joey Sly jersey?
Oh, my gosh, I would hope not.
I would really, if somebody has a legit Joey Sly jersey, I don't know what I'd give him. I'd give him something. I'll give you something if you can produce photo evidence of a true. The problem is now, anybody can fake anything. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And I'm too old to be able to tell the difference. So, I don't know. Just if you got one, I think that would be crazy, A. You know, I'd like to see it. So anyway, there you have it. Zay Jones, no longer a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll come back. Hour number two straight ahead if you want to be a part of it. 641-1010 in the All-Pro Roofing phone lines. And we will continue the countdown of our five favorite moves the Jags have made this offseason. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, with Tony Smith and Dylan Denmark, Mike Dempsey here with you on this Tuesday top five out there, your five favorite Jaguar offseason moves to this point. Do you agree with the grade Mike DeRocco gave Trent Baalke for the offseason? That may be our question tomorrow, Tony. Mm-hmm. What grade do you give to Trent Baalke up to this point in the offseason? I don't give him a perfect score, but I certainly give him a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got a lot accomplished. You don't get everything you want done. You don't get every player you want. You can't, you know, did he want to trade up in the draft? He admitted so, right? Yeah. You can't always make it happen, right? You got to have somebody who's willing to move out of that spot. And you're also competing against a bunch of other teams potentially trying to get up to get the same players or at least draft spots. So I'm not making excuses. It is what it is. I'm saying there's been good. There's been bad. There's been successes. There have been failures. There have been, you know, pivots as well along the way. Like, hey, this didn't work. Let's slide on over here. They certainly didn't go into free agency thinking, hey, let's go sign Eric Armstead. He wasn't available. You know, mm-hmm. There were some whispers that he might be available, but it was more through trade and then didn't happen. Pounce got that done. So anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. I was just telling Dylan, you stepped out of the room for a sec.
Yeah.
This time of year where, you know, if you're in fantasy football dynasty leagues, you're going to start doing your rookie drafts now.
Yes, it is.
Super exciting time, right? We act like we're NFL general managers. We trade picks. We move around the board. We do our YouTube video assessments of Malik Nabers versus Roma Dunze. And now we've got Caleb Williams versus Daniel Jones to factor into those decisions and all this. So anyway, guy throws out his early rookie wide receiver rankings. Now, this is dynasty long term.
Okay.
So you would expect who to be at the top?
Marvin Harrison.
Of course, right? Yeah. So, right, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be the top guy both for this year and for the long term, right? That's what you would expect. Who do you expect the next two players to be?
The two other guys, one of the top two, right?
And, and it's Nabers and Dunze in that order, but I can see preferring a Dunze because of the landing spot, pairing up with Caleb Williams, maybe a slower start because he's got more veterans in front of him, whatever. Okay. Number four for the long term, Keon Coleman. All right, I think that's okay.
That's an interesting one, yeah.
Right, he steps in arguably immediately as the number one wide receiver, if not the number one passing game target for Josh Allen. Maybe he won't be. Maybe it'll be Dalton Kincaid, whatever. But he's got that opportunity, right? Okay. Number five, Roman Wilson. Really? Oh, the Steelers' number two guy now.
Yeah.
Now, look, I mean, Russell Wilson may improve their fortunes this year. That just seems a little bit odd to me that, you know, the Steelers obviously have a plan for him, and he's probably the Diontae Johnson replacement. That just seems a little bit aggressive.
Yeah. But, like, when you're getting into this kind of territory with these receivers, there is no way in my mind I would have him ahead of Xavier Worthy.
Well, he's six.
Right, for example.
No way I would either.
Right, like in that offense? Yeah.
Worthy or Thomas's upside, I think, is so far behind Roman Wilson. Now, if Roman Wilson hits his ceiling, I'll get a Roman Wilson equivalent player for a lot cheaper than if Brian Thomas Jr. ever hits his ceiling.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Xavier Worthy is at six.
And the Worthy thing would make sense to me in that comparison specifically, but even the Worthy versus Brian Thomas Jr. in my mind is close.
I would put Brian Thomas ahead of Worthy, quite frankly.
And
look, we've seen Mecole Hardman go to the Chiefs just because you're fast. And Xavier Worthy is a better college receiver than Mecole Hardman, and they're not the same guy, and I get all that. But, you know, there's no guarantee he's going to have this huge rookie campaign. They got Marquise Brown, who does a lot of the same stuff there, and Rashee Rice will play at some point. Ladd McConkey comes in seven.
Okay.
A lot of people love Ladd McConkey, and he does go to play with Herbert. And, you know, Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston are not this great duo. Johnston had a very mediocre to poor rookie season, for instance, okay?
Yeah.
Luke McCaffrey's at eight, Tone. I mean, what are we doing here?
Okay.
Jalen Polk is at nine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, the depth chart's pretty wide open, and you can like Drake May all you like, but he's playing with a rookie receiver. I have no idea how that's going to go. And then Brian Thomas Jr. is at 10.
I'm
not trying to homer up here. Five or six at the worst, and four is defensible, honestly.
It would be the top three guys for me. I think, personally, I probably have Worthy at four.
Okay.
On my list because of the offense he's playing in.
Sure.
I'd probably have him at four, and then it'd be Brian Thomas.
Thomas Coleman, I think, are close. Because it's not about who you think is a better player.
No.
It's in many ways, it's about opportunity, fit, all those kinds of things. And I just found it interesting. Like, what do we do? And then Troy Franklin, by the way, at Knight Mitchell at 11, I'd take over several of those guys.
Yeah.
And I'd take Troy Franklin over several of those guys as well. Troy Franklin gets to go play with his college quarterback.
Yes, he does.
I mean, what better? And there was some whispers around today that we may see a Courtland Sutton trade sooner rather than later. Now, if that happens, that's even more not the same type player at all, but it just means more targets in the pool for the Denver pass catchers if he does eventually get shipped out. And Pittsburgh is the team supposedly interested. Keep in mind, he did catch 10 touchdowns with Russell Wilson at quarterback last year for that team. And I think he fits in pretty well in Pittsburgh, where you got Pickens, who's a field stretcher. You'd have the big body Sutton, and you got Roman Wilson kind of working in between the hashes and whatnot. Pockets, why don't we, before we hit the break, continue our countdown of our top five favorite Jacksonville Jaguar offseason moves.
Number three.
We're on the third one here. Okay, my fifth one was hiring Ryan Nielsen. My fourth was signing Eric Armstead. My third is one that is number one on a lot of people's list, and that's signing Mitch Morse. Look, they needed to upgrade at center. Heard a lot of Balky's not going to admit he was wrong. Balky took Luke Fortner. There's no way Balky's going to admit a mistake. Like, again, I think Trent Balky wants to win as much, if not more, than all of you out there. I mean, it's his profession. It's what he's worked his whole life for. Does it mean he makes the right moves all the time? No, of course not. But signing Mitch Morse was one that I think universally approved by the Jags. Good veteran player, not the best in the league, but certainly a guy who's very competent, upgrades your interior three, I think, significantly. And, you know, look, if he just gives Trevor Lawrence that extra half second of time, that's good enough. If he can get some push in short yardage, well, we hope that he improves these areas. That's why we signed him. But, you know, 2 year, I don't know if I'd call it a stopgap, but at least we went into the draft not needing to address the position. And if, you know, it fell a certain way, maybe they would have taken an interior offensive lineman. But I like Mitch Morse signing at number three ahead of Nielsen and Armstead. Who you got?
Number three for me, I got the first round process and pick of LSU wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. Has a real chance to become a number one for the Jags in pretty short order. First wide receiver that the Jags have taken in the first round since all the way back in 2012 with Justin Blackmon, which is more about prioritizing a position that the league has seen as a premium position for a while now than anything else. They still have two picks heading their way next year from the trade down in the first round, and they say they would have taken him at 17 even if they hadn't been able to trade the pick. So they got the player they wanted after trading down and acquiring those extra picks that they'll still be able to use. And as we talked about throughout the draft process, Brian Thomas Jr. was right at or near the top of the list for guys that we would love to see them land in the first round of the draft. Well, now he's here. I couldn't be any more excited about what that could potentially mean for Trevor Lawrence and this Jaguars offense in the short-term future.
Dylan Denmark.
Yes, sir. Number three for me. I'm going to go with the domino effect that started free agency moves for Jacksonville. And I was not signing Calvin Ridley.
Okay.
I don't think he was worth the $22, $24 million that he got from Tennessee. And I think if Jacksonville would have signed him, they would have been hamstrung and they would have made a lot of other moves, obviously not getting Eric Armstead and others. So I'm going to say Calvin Ridley not signing with Jacksonville.
The only thing I'll say to that, and that's certainly understandable, and a lot of people have mentioned not signing Calvin Ridley, that he wasn't worth that money. I think they did have the cap space to get it done. I mean, you look at the cap space now. They absolutely, and especially because if, let's say Ridley for 20, right, was the number they're willing to go to. Well, the first year doesn't have to be 20. First year might be 10, might be 15, whatever. And you look at where they sit now. I think they could have got it done, but that doesn't change, Dylan, the fact that they would have had less resources and maybe then they're not going to take Brian Thomas in the first round. And then maybe they take Terrion Arnold, and that's fine, but you never would have known what kind of value they could have gotten by moving back, right? And what it did, it enabled them, I think, to set the board up to where they could move back, signing Gabe Davis, having him in place, but they had their eye on Brian Thomas. I don't know. A lot of people have mentioned that and not signing Ridley, not paying him $20-plus million. I mean, in the end, Brian Thomas will make less than 4 years than Calvin Ridley will make this season. So from that standpoint, you know, Titans, draft a couple more guys with DWIs, and they'll be in midseason form. All right, we'll come back. up to number two in the countdown when we continue on. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of overlap in our final couple of selections. You can send us your list if you'd like. We'll look at some of those coming in. Zay Jones released by the Jags today. Joey Sly released with ever kicking a football for the team after Cam Little was selected in the sixth round out of Arkansas to compete with now just Riley Patterson. So Jags signed 13 undrafted free agents. So a busy little news day on the heels of the fifth-year options being picked up for both Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. And we're just 48 hours out from, or so, 72 hours out from the NFL draft. A lot going on around these parts. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I feel like I'm in a commercial for, like, ABC's 1978 fall lineup right now, Tony.
Yeah.
Like, hey, coming up
it's
next.
It's got that vibe, no
doubt.
It
does kind of have that vibe a little bit. Just talking, it's getting to be, you know, we've been grinding on the draft and all that's fun. We got rookie minicamps and veteran minicamps and OTAs and all this still to come and plenty of time left. We're just a third of the way through the year, but it's good time for us, you know, a little downtime now, a little binge watching time. And I was just telling you guys, one of my maybe top 10 to 12-ish favorite series ever, Black Sails.
Ain't that good.
It's good. Oh, yeah. It's not top five, but it's really, really good. Kind of a loosely historical pirate drama with a lot of dramatization mm-hmm. in there, you know, and all the taboos that you don't want your kids watching.
Yeah.
Okay, so don't watch it with the kids. All right, but it's on Netflix now, four seasons on Stars, and the only way I ever was able to watch it, you know, they give you the, like, 1 or 2 weeks a year, Xfinity does a free binge week, right? You watch whatever. And I would watch, like, half a season of Black Sails, and then when it would come back around, and I eventually made it through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Awesome
show. I remember that's how I watched The Jinx the first time.
Is that right?
When it was, like, the hot
really
news at the time, right? It was, like, the end of that series was, like, everyone's got to see kind of what happened at the end. I was like, all right, I'll check it out.
Is part two out, or is it just coming
out? They
got
a couple of episodes that they've put out.
Okay, what's it on?
HBO.
It is on HBO. Okay, I got them all, man. I don't have Paramount, but I got just about everything.
Yeah.
Spend way too damn much money on streaming.
That's how I watched it, was the free week. I was like, oh, okay, I'll watch The Jinx. I didn't have HBO at the time.
Do you write your cable bill off in your taxes?
No, I do not.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to be able to watch sports for my job.
Ah.
You have to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and yeah, I can watch all these other things too, but without the access to the sports.
Well, and yeah, that's pretty much all I watch on TV.
It's the only reason why most of us have a cable bill.
Yeah.
Or a streaming bill, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You go.
That's mental note.
Itemize,
made.
Baby.
Yes.
Itemize. Why don't we take a few items from around the rest of the National Football League?
Now, gems around the NFL. Brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
The Jacksonville Jaguars picked up the fifth-year options on Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne yesterday. Other fifth-year options picked up include Atlanta tight end Kyle Pitts, Buffalo defensive end Greg Rousseau, Miami wide receiver Jalen Waddle, and linebacker Jalen Phillips, and Minnesota offensive tackle Christian Darrisaw. The Kansas City Chiefs and tight end Travis Kelce have agreed to terms on a two-year contract extension that will make him the highest-paid tight end in the NFL. Kelce is now under contract with Kansas City through the 2027 NFL season.
All right, thanks, Tone. I saw a piece over Pro Football Talk that both the Giants and Minnesota Vikings offered multiple first-round picks to get up to number three with New England. The Giants, who were drafting at six, were offering that pick plus their first-rounder next year. So basically, you can have J.J. McCarthy and a first-rounder, or you can have Drake May. And I guess you can't be 100% sure you'll get J.J. McCarthy,
mm-hmm.
right? You risk somebody jumping in front of you at 4 or 5 and getting him. The other thing I read yesterday about the Giants was that they were set to take Joe Alt, which would have been fun. Like, if J.C. Latham had gone to the Chargers, who the Titans ultimately selected,
yeah,
and the Giants go Joe Alt, of course, maybe then we got to deal with Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze.
Maybe.
You know?
I would guess that's where it would go.
But honestly, I when they took Latham, I'm like, it's not a bad pick to take an offensive lineman, right? A highly regarded offensive lineman. But I would have felt like a queasiness in my stomach had they taken a Dunze. I really would have. Like, really? You know, like, I don't want to deal with those superstar wide receivers if I don't have to on a daily basis. So let's hope, or a weekly basis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's a couple hope, times a year. Yeah.
Right. You know, six times in potentially in your division, you got all those teams. You don't need them loaded up. I mean, Colts starting to load up a little bit, but regardless, Houston's obviously loaded. But let's hope Brian Thomas turns into a true top of the depth chart type guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the wide receiver cores in the division right now. Houston's got to be the best, don't you think? With Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell as their top three? I think that's
– yeah.
I think that's – Tank Dell showed a lot, I thought, last year when he was healthy.
He did.
Right? And they're different type guys. I'm not saying the Jags can't get there with the guys that they have. You know, Tennessee has got Ridley. They got Hopkins. They're two vets. Treylon Burks has not done – anything really to speak of in his brief NFL career. So, you know, three deep, I think the Jags have a chance to match up pretty well. And maybe the Titans have a slight edge this year because their top two guys are vets. But I think the overall talent that the Jags, I mean, the talent of Brian Thomas, you could put up against Ridley.
Yeah.
I think Kirk is probably as good, if not better, than DeAndre Hopkins at this stage of their respective careers. Very close. And then you have Gabe Davis, who's better than Treylon Burks, for sure.
No doubt.
Indy adds Adonai Mitchell to Michael Pittman Jr. They got Josh Downs. You know, I don't see why we take a back. You know, you could argue Michael Pittman Jr.'s numbers look good because he got force-fed the football.
Certainly.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
I don't think he's any, like, light years better than Christian Kirk.
No.
Right? And I think, I mean, certainly the Jags like Brian Thomas Jr. a lot better than they like Adonai Mitchell. They took him in the draft. That'll tell you something. Mitchell almost made it to the 48th pick.
Yeah.
Second time around. And I'd take Gabe. So I think the Jags ahead of the Colts, probably ahead of the Titans, behind Houston. And they could go either direction, by the way, depending on what Brian Thomas Jr. shows us.
Absolutely.
As a rookie here. So the Giants offered six and their first next year. Minnesota apparently offered 11-23, their first next year, but they wanted a couple of picks back in the middle rounds as well. So they would have gotten three, but you're dropping, instead of the six, you're dropping to 11. You are getting 23 this year. By the way, see the deal Christian Barmore got yesterday?
Yeah.
Really, man, $92 million bucks? Like, wow, that seemed like a lot of cash for that. I mean, he's a nice player. Guys getting paid, man. It's good to be good enough to play in the National Football League, isn't
it? Yeah. Look, we talked a lot about it when the Jags were having to play that game with Josh Allen and what's the contract going to look like and, you know, waiting for him to see what the other deals for the other guys, Burns and those guys, were going to wind up being. And that was going to inform a lot about what was going to happen ultimately with Josh Allen. And, you know, we talked about it through that process. Are you willing to make the offer that makes him say yes, that he doesn't want to wait to see what it's going to be? And he was willing to wait to see. The team was willing to wait to see, right? The entire thing, that's how that process played out. Well, you're watching these deals that are being signed across the league right now. It's all in reaction to, whoa, that's what the money is now, right? It's, I don't care what a guy signed a contract for 4 years ago.
Right.
That don't play. You know, like, the contracts that matter are the ones that are being signed right now at these positions across the league, and it makes the Barmore deal, which made him, I think, the seventh highest paid defensive tackle.
He had a good year last year. He had 8.5 sacks last year. But before, the two previous years, he had 4 total sacks.
Yeah.
He had one good year.
Yeah.
$92 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or that's one significant year. It's not that he was a bad player previous. He just didn't stand out.
We're not willing to walk away from this guy, risk not having him anymore going into the future. That's the cost of doing those kind of things with that level of player.
And
right
you
now.
Look at it, and now, granted, Barmore is super young. Right?
Yes.
You're projecting a long future for him, right? But that contract doesn't cover the entirety of his future. Eric Armstead can be just as productive a player in the
Certainly.
Next couple years, and you're getting him at a considerable discount. He's proven more to be that player consistently than Barmore has. But Barmore's seen as a rising guy. So just interesting. And New England was one of those handful of teams that had the cap space, like Jacksonville, coming out of this draft to sign one of their guys. All right. Speaking of signing guys, why don't we get to our next in the countdown?
Number two.
Who's next to go? Is it me? I don't know who.
I think I should go first.
You go, Dylan. Why don't you go first?
I'm going to say Eric Armstead. The signing from San Francisco, the defensive lineman,
The only issue with him is Ben's injury past the last 2 years. He was very productive, one of the best defensive linemen in the league. Played half a season 2 years ago and played in 12 games a year ago, 12 of their 20 games because San Francisco made the Super Bowl. I hate selling this short, but I feel like if he plays 13 games for us this regular season, it's a good season for him considering what he's done the last 2 years. Can pass rush the passer from the interior position, and you're adding a really good dude on the outside along with Josh Allen, Trayvon Walker.
Can't imagine a better mentor for Mason Smith. Just really cannot. You know, I think it's so good of a fit for Mason Smith. That doesn't make Mason Smith the right pick. Mason Smith will play and determine whether he was the right pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But, man, the fit with Armstead there is fantastic. For me, it was the re-signing, not only of Josh Allen, but Foye Oluokun. I put him in there, too. I felt like he deserved mention. These are two of the defensive team leaders of the Jacksonville Jaguars. The reason I don't have Josh Allen number one on this list is he wasn't going anywhere. Right? And it's important that they got the long-term deal done. I do think it sends a good message inside the locker room, sends a message to Allen, sends a message to the fan base, sends whatever you want, but it locks up your best defensive player for a long time. That's the most important thing that it does. But you also have the stability that another one of your leaders, Foye Oluokun, who there are zero questions about his toughness, his willingness, his smarts, his everything, his talent. So you lock up a couple of core pieces of your team. You reward your own instead of always going out. And granted, Oluokun was a free agent, but he's become a Jag now. And Josh is a Jag through and through and very defensible. If anybody has this as number one on their list, I certainly think many do. But I put it at number two, re-signing Allen and Foye.
For me, at number two, it's Mitch Morse, the signing of center Mitch Morse. 2 years, $19.5 million deal. It gets Luke Fortner out of the starting lineup. When last season ended, the top two priorities for the team, in my mind, were get Fortner off the field, was at the maybe the top of my list, and redo the deal with Josh Allen, right? Those were my top two priorities going into the offseason. It's not a surprise that they're going to wind up as my number one and two on this list ultimately. But number two on this list for me is Mitch Morse getting the two-year, $19.5 million deal and the impact I think that it can have on the guys to his left and right. And, you know, we didn't mention specifically necessarily the Ezra Cleveland deal, but when that deal got signed and we watched fans reacting like, why are they paying him this much? It's like, wait to see what the contracts wind up being.
That's another good one. I can put him
and
in there too.
He winds up getting a contract that's getting him paid in the mid-20s among guards in the league. Okay.
You mean a multiple-year deal.
Yeah.
Right.
It was an
awesome
deal.
He's getting like $9 million a year,
right,
something
like
that.
The way that it worked out, it's as good as it could possibly be, but I do have Mitch Morse at number two on my list.
Yeah, you know what? I'll throw Cleveland in there. Re-signing their own free agents. I thought they did a nice job. And that is a good point on the Cleveland deal because when you look, is Robert Hunt a better player? I think so. Is he more than twice the player of Ezra Cleveland? Because that's what he's getting paid, you know? So it's about resource management as well. You know, would we like Robert Hunt over Ezra Cleveland? No. Offense to Ezra, I probably would, right? But, you know, would I like him at $20 million? No, I would not.
No.
I don't want to pay a guard.
Not if I can get Ezra at $8.5 million.
Correct.
Right. Like, so, it's, no.
Anyway, all right, we'll do number one on the countdown, but let's look, and I think we've got a couple of different ones in here, but we're focusing in on the main components of what we really liked, what the Jags were able to accomplish this offseason. We'll look at your top five list when we return in a moment as well. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Dylan Denmark here with you with a Tuesday top five, your five favorite Jacksonville Jaguar offseason moves. What were they? Let us know on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL.
All right, we appreciate you tuning in for the show, however you choose to do it. Maybe driving around Duval proper on 1010XL or 92.5 FM. Maybe you are watching it on YouTube. We appreciate that as well. You could be streaming it on one of our apps, whatever you're doing. We thank you for taking a little time out of your day to spend with us here on Jaguars Today as we're looking at the Tuesday top five coming down the stretch here, Tony, on our top five favorite offseason moves that the Jags have made. Let's wrap up ours. We'll recap our lists and tell you what our favorite move was, and then we'll look at some of your submissions today before we hand things off to Helmets and Heels coming up in under 20 minutes from now. Pockets.
Number one.
All right, who wants to go? Is it me? Is it Tone? Go ahead, Tone.
Okay.
Get, count them back from 5 to 1.
Yep. At 5, I had third-round pick Jarian Jones, cornerback out of FSU. 4, Eric Armstead on that 3-year, $43 million deal. 3, the pick and process with LSU wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. 2, center Mitch Morse, 2 years, $19.5 million. And 1, Josh Allen extension, 5 years, $141.25 million, 88 total guaranteed, second behind only Nick Bosa in total money and average annual value. But even at those numbers, compared to what I was willing to pay, it's a bargain for Josh Allen here in Jacksonville. Ultimately, the deal that they got done and how great it was to watch a player that I think will wind up being the best defensive player in franchise history by the time that he gets to the end of this deal, had the kind of season he just had here in Jacksonville, and the way that he expressed himself in that press conference after signing that deal the next day, where, you know, he set the bar high for what he expects out of himself, and I think he's got the talent to reach all of those goals that he sets for himself. We'll see if he can accomplish all of that during his time here in Jacksonville, but them getting that deal done with Josh Allen at the price that they got it done, absolutely 1 for me.
Dylan?
I must go 5, Mitch Morse signing. 4, the Ryan Nielsen, getting him as a defensive coordinator. 3, not signing Calvin Ridley. At 2, Eric Armstead. And 1, I had the Josh Allen extension for everything that Tony just said. And we got the deal done. We don't have to worry about it going into camp. Don't have to worry about a holdout or anything like that. And he's locked up for the next couple of years.
All right, more than a couple. So absolutely. And I agree with you, Tone. I think, I mean, it'll be a shock if by the time his Jaguar tenure is up that he's not considered the greatest defensive player in team history at that point. My 1, because I had Allen and the Foye, all the re-signings at 2, it is the way they maneuvered through the first round and ended up with Brian Thomas. It was my fervent hope all offseason going into the draft. Once we started to settle on kind of the rankings, the consensus rankings in the top 20 are generally pretty close, right? These guys don't often put a guy in the top 20 that doesn't go, say, in the top 25 picks. It happened on occasion with like a Johnny Newton, one or two guys slide. But for the most part, you get a pretty good sense of what's going to be available when you're drafting there in the middle of the round. And we got a pretty good sense of that. And I had hoped we'd have 5 or 6 players that I'd be equally happy with. And you might not agree with me in the listening audience that you would have been equally happy, or maybe you're not happy that we went this direction instead of Terry and Arnold. It could have all been the same, but we would have gone corner, and then the entire rest of the draft maybe falls a different way. And that's fine. But for me, Brian Thomas was second on my wish list anyway, behind Troy Faletanu. I would have been okay with Quinyon Mitchell or Terry and Arnold, that's the direction they had chosen to go. But being that he was so highly coveted by me, and they added a 3rd, 4th, and 5th round pick, and for the people that say Balky's not going to know what to do with him, man, you can always just take a swing. At the very least, Tony, take another swing on a guy. If you like Jarian Jones, well, you're going to have a pick better than that in the 3rd round from Minnesota. And then you're going to have another 4th round pick to add some depth to your football team, or maybe package together in a trade up or whatever. Who knows what opportunities present themselves. And oh, by the way, you got a super exciting player who runs in the 4.3s, is big, tall, relentless, super productive, played for a big program at the highest level. Going to come in here with great opportunity, can grow with a young quarterback. I love the fit. I love everything about it. But to get paid off for taking the guy is still, to me, one of the best moves anybody made in the 1st round. And I know a lot of people like Minnesota moving up to get Dallas Turner. That's fine. If that's the guy you're coveting, okay. You gave up a 1st, a 3rd, a 4th, and a 5th for him. Maybe it works out for you. It might, right? But for me, by the way, this whole the pundit thing. Yesterday, Field Yates. Leatu Latu is my favorite defensive player in the draft. Okay? Went and looked at Field Yates' rankings. Dallas Turner was his highest rated defensive player in the draft. The hell are you talking about?
Right.
I mean, what are we doing? It's come on. Do we have to say, well, you know, I kind of knew that this was a possibility. All right. We all kind of knew the rumors were out there, but it's one or the other. You know, if you say, hey, he was my 2 guy, they liked him 1, fine. What's the big deal? I don't see what the problem is. All right. So anyway, let's get to some of these reactions today. Your five favorite moves of the offseason. I'll go through the first list, and then I'll add any that I see along the way, mentioning what is number one in everyone's list. Josh Allen extension, number one. The whole first-round thing with Brian Thomas, not signing Ridley, Nielsen, and Armstead for Dr. Cliffy. Cristiano added at the top of the list, firing Mike Caldwell, not signing Ridley, bringing in Armstead, re-signing Allen, not guaranteeing Press Taylor as the play caller. That's a – okay. I mean, all right. It's your list. Let's see. Morse, Armstead, Thomas, the trade down. Scott split those up. Drafting of Thomas and the trade down, two separate things. And hopefully the signing of Gabe Davis. Well, it's your top five. So let's see. Josh Allen extension, a first rounder to stay in Jacksonville. Beefing up the D-line, especially adding Key. Should we tell him? I think they mean Armstead. I'm guessing they mean
I would hope,
right? And they just probably had Arden on the mind. Arden, Armstead, close enough. Adding a vet center, Brian Thomas Jr., and drafting a kicker. We need to figure out the position. Those points add up. Well, sure they do. Every kicker scores a bunch of them. Armstead, Allen, Jarian Jones getting some love here. Clearing cap space in the wide receiver room with Zay Jones released, no matter how unfortunate it is, said Adam. And having the bold 30 logo chosen as the team's 30th anniversary season. By the way, get the stadium deal done.
Mm-hmm.
All these become way down my list.
That's number one
through 100 for me. If you get the stadium deal done, I mean, it's still I still want them to make all these wise moves. But if you told me I could have the stadium deal done or I don't know what I would give up here, right? Because it's not like you have to give up one to get the other. You can have both. You know what I mean? It's so much more important that I give back Eric Armstead if I could have the stadium deal done today. I would. You know, I don't want to give up everything because we want to compete, right? And it doesn't mean that we can't get the deal done anyway. I just want it done. I want everybody to be happy. I want the Jags to be locked in. I want to be able to laugh in people's faces. I want to point it at Patrick Mahomes' wife and go, where are you guys going to be playing in a couple of years? Because I don't know, right? Might not be Arrowhead, whatever the case may be, man. But just get it done. That's going to push everything into the back seat. Let's see. Ezra Cleveland deal made somebody's top five here. Let's see. Foye's extension. I think we kind of start. Ronald Darby. Made somebody's list. Moving back to take a wide receiver one. Ronald Darby, a proven vet. Josh Allen extension shows good faith. T-Law, ETN, fifth-year options picked up. And Darnell Savage is going to be a weapon right there. And Andrew said bonus Mason Smith learning behind Armstead. Yeah, I will, again, love the fit. So they did some pretty good stuff.
I agree.
This year. And, you know, the pessimists out there, which you're allowed to be a pessimist. I am at times about many things, but you know, Tony and Mike are trying to tell us all season we should be so excited this team made all these right moves. And we like the moves. You don't have to be excited.
No.
Be excited. Be angry. Be miserable. Be bored. Be whatever you want if you want to.
Do whatever you want to do with it. What if we didn't ask this question today, but now that we've gone through all the top fives with everyone, what is your least favorite move of the Jaguars offseason?
I'd have to think. I don't want to give the like the
I know it's
the
it's,
snap answer right off the top of my head. I would say not getting it done with because Ridley like I like the way it ended up with Brian Thomas. Mm-hmm. I don't want to and I don't know what the how they would have looked at it. Like if Ridley was back and maybe Zay would be maybe gone anyway, right? Would they have gone Brian Thomas in the first round? I don't know. Would they have traded back? I would think they probably still would have, and maybe they'd just have Terry and Arnold there, and they'd have Calvin Ridley, and instead they would have drafted a receiver in, like, the third or fourth round, something like that.
I get it. It's kind of an odd question because we don't know what opportunities were actually there.
What they missed out on.
Right. Like, we don't know what the answer to any of that
I
kind of thing.
Maybe
is.
Not being able to trade back up for one of their targets.
Not being able to use whatever ammo they got to move.
In the, you know, because it sounds like maybe McKinstry in the second round would have been a target of theirs.
Yeah.
But I do like the Mason. I'm intrigued by the Mason Smith selection, but you probably wouldn't have had him.
If I had to pick one, the Mason Smith pick is probably the one because it indicates that they weren't able to make the move.
Okay.
Like, I think the combination of my own kind of questions that I have about the Mason pick, which I look at the player and the athlete, and I can see it, right? Like, I'm not questioning why he's a second round pick. It's I have my own questions with a guy who had 2 years of injuries his first and second year in college and didn't really feel healthy till the end of his third year and then declared for the draft. Like, I see why they made the pick there, but he does make me a little bit nervous for all the reasons that we've talked about, and it does indicate that they weren't able to make the move up. So if I was going to pick one that would bum me out a little bit, that would be the one.
That's fine.
But it doesn't upset me all that much that they wound up with Mason
Smith.
Right.
I think for a lot of people, they'd say retaining Balky, right?
Yes.
And that's fine. Like, I would have been great moving on, right? But I think he's done a pretty good job this offseason. So there's no guarantee that anybody you replaced him with would have done as well as he did, really. I mean, in my opinion, and you can, you're kissing Balky's butt again. Whatever.
Right. And my anticipation of the entire offseason was along the lines of, here's the guy that I would have fired having control of the offseason. And I still come out of the offseason feeling like, I think he did a good job.
I think he did a good job. As we say all the time, all right, we would have made the move. Now that they're not going to make the move, I'm not going to sit here and go, I would have done it different. I would have. No. Let's see what he does and judge him on what he does. And to this point, I mean, certainly a very easily passing grade. I don't, you know, for most people wouldn't give him an A. There are probably people going, are you kidding me? This draft was horrendous because I've seen him on social media saying it. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's your prerogative. But that wouldn't even really be on the radar for me at that time. Maybe Doug Peterson, like, I don't know if I'm that upset with I don't know who's going to call the plays, but maybe that could have been, put it this way, certainly from the court of public opinion, if Doug comes out and goes, hey, I'm going to take that back, but he's, in doing so, throwing his guy under the bus in the process. So we'll see how that all plays out, man. I don't know. I think tomorrow will be, no matter how you felt about retaining him, what kind of job has Trent Baalke done, in your opinion, this offseason?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not probably going to put it in poll form because you can't, I don't know if I can cover all the, maybe I will. I like the poll because we get a lot more responses that way, you know? And so maybe I'll do one, a side-by-side quick poll, which one best fits, and then another one where you can give us more detail on what he did well, what he didn't do well, what have you, and at least from your perspective. So anyway, top five today, always fun. Enjoyed that. Appreciate Mike DiRocco stopping by. Zay Jones, wish you the best. I thought he was, you know, a good player while he was here and gave what he had. And sorry he got hurt last year.
Caught up in the special teams value mix, man.
It happens.
You know,
bro,
you're going to be the fourth, fifth wide receiver on an NFL team. You got to be able to add value in special teams. And unfortunately for Zay, there's just not much there.
Hope he finds a home soon. You know, Joey Sly, same thing, man. Great Jaguar career, Joe. you know, maybe one day we'll bring you back for Old Timers Day or something like that.
Zay will always have the two-point conversion against Baltimore.
Oh, won't he?
Forever.
Though? Won't he, though?
Yes.
Right? I mean, that was a pair dangling from Dougie P and the crew, and they executed. Mm-hmm. All right. That'll do it for us today. Join us tomorrow, but please do stick around for the fantastically well-informed trio of Helmets and Heels. Coming your way next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.